Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. I'm going to go into a little bit of what we're going to be going over today. We're going to be trying to get into the weeds on how to execute ABM and what that looks like at different levels, different stages. We have experts from all different places and positions in terms of company sizes and how they approach ABM. So we're going to be going into some of that. Our goal here too is to get away from the traditional enterprise thought leadership around ABM that can be all too vague and theoretical, and sometimes you leave not knowing exactly what your first actions are going to be. So we're going to try and get into the weeds. This is recorded and the chat is open for questions. So if you have any questions as you get into this, put them down in the comments. We'll answer them as quick as possible as they fit into the conversation. But Let's get rolling. Awesome. And let's do official intros. Let's go Karina first. Who are you?
That's a loaded question. I am Karina Owens, and I have been doing marketing, leading marketing teams for the past 13 years, predominantly in B2B and then predominantly in SaaS. I have often been a first-time marketing hire, so that's meant that I've had to pretty much understand everything, which led to my understanding and discovery of ABM back in like 2015, 2016. And since then, I've been specializing in building those programs from the ground up, predominantly in an enterprise environment. And now I serve as a fractional ABM leader for companies. And I serve as an advisor for several different tech companies that you may know of, like Novatic and Postal, just to name a few. And happy to be here and chat ABM.
I love it. Mason, what about you?
I was just adding in the chat, essentially, like half of my knowledge of ABM to Karina. So I'm having a bit of a fangirl moment as we talk. But all that to say, hi, I'm Mason Cosby, founder of a company called Scrappy ABM. We deliver step-by-step programs for the crawl stage of account-based marketing. So I love what we're going to be talking through today. It's not like the ethereal ideas of like ABM is super comp, because like it is, but at the core, there are some really easy ways that you can get started by doing signal-based go-to-market. So we'll be talking through exactly how to do that. And I am super pumped to talk through it from like a low tech stack and early stage approach.
Love it.
Awesome. I'll finish this off. Tyler here. I am the Associate Director of Growth Marketing at Movable Inc. This is my fourth time now building an ABM program from scratch. I've been doing it for now going on 5 or so years. And honestly, I know Karina's not going to like this, but way back when, she was one of the first people that I connected with to really bring me up to speed as I was learning more about the strategy and how to get going. So I owe a lot, I would say, in addition to Mason, like he said, I owe a lot to her to where I'm at today and helping me with my knowledge. Yeah, super excited to share my insights on my journey and what I'm doing today.
Awesome. The topic today is really going to be too around the signal-based portion of this, but we want to talk about how to lay the groundwork for these programs. So just want to open this up of what does that look like for all of you? What groundwork does everybody need to lay before you start building an ABM program, whether that's headcount, conversations that you need to have, anything like that?
I can start on this one because I talk about this literally every single day, like 8 times a day. Start at the points of failure. So like there are some really well-documented reasons why ABM is going to fail. I can rattle them off: sales and marketing alignment, lack of dedicated resources, and just the measurement capabilities around how we're actually going to measure success. The sales and marketing alignment, as an example, marketing will say leads and they mean MQLs or contact generator or whatever. Sales says leads, they mean opportunities in pipeline. So like at the core, if we use the same words, but we mean different things, we are speaking a different language. So nobody likes to do this, but like developing an actual glossary of, hey, you said this, what does that mean to you? which sounds really dumb. And nobody wants to be that person that's, hey, I know we keep talking about like leads, but what does that mean? And it's funny, like right before we actually kicked live, I'm going to rat on all of us. We asked, like, when we think about the word signals, what does that functionally mean? If we can't get aligned on our definitions, we don't know how to actually go build a program. So that's the first thing. Lack of dedicated resources. The running joke I say on everything is the worst thing that can happen is the CMO is tuned into this and they're like, oh my gosh, I love ABM. And then they're going to take this and send the link to their marketing manager and say, hey, we need to build an ABM program. And that's it. That's all the support that they're going to get. So then what happens is someone is given the accountability to build ABM, but not the authority for organizational change. So then they're set up for failure. And then the last piece, sorry, I just get really passionate about failure. Super fun topic. The last piece is like, how do we measure success? Again, going back to what is a signal? What dictates that an account is aware? What does that mean? What does it mean that they're engaged? What does it mean that they're actually ready for sales? What is a sales ready account? What do any of those things mean? And then how do you measure that that's actually repeatable and scalable down the road? So if you're thinking about where to start, figure out why you would fail and then solve for those things first before you ever even think about building an ABM program. Soapbox is over.
Karina and Tyler, rebuttal?
I don't think I have anything to really add to what Mason said. I think in some of my cases, laying that groundwork, I think has to begin with making sure key internal stakeholders, and I think this probably goes back to sales and marketing alignment, understand what account-based marketing is. Like, what are we actually trying to do? Because it does require a little bit of a different motion, as Mason alluded to, and how we work together. What are the goals? What are the measurements? And so before you even start getting into the tactics and the details, I think you have to make sure that whether it's a VP or a CMO or whoever, there needs to be a firm understanding of what it is that we're trying to do with this strategy. And then I would say the second part that Mason hit on that was really important was making sure you have the authority and probably the autonomy to build that strategy and go and run with it and ensure that you're going to have the resources to do. Because if you're not, then it's going to be a really big uphill battle to be able to get anything done. If one, you don't have that top-down understanding, and then two, you don't have the authority and the autonomy to go and build it. So those would be like the two big things that I would add on to what Mason said.
Yeah, I'll piggyback off of both of those. I think the biggest thing here is always aligning back to a business objective that you're trying to solve. And that's just great marketing advice, but this really suits well in ABM. A lot of times too, there's several metrics that and milestones that you could lean on from your demand generation. So activity on site, right? Number of net new contacts identified. How are people, what is the top channel for bringing people in? Your ABM program should be like a laser focused, best fit approach to your best fit accounts. But taking into everything that Mason and Tyler just shared, I think the biggest thing is making sure that you're always communicating your hypothesis for what you're hoping you're going to achieve from a business perspective. But yeah, I think just underline, highlight, make sure people are speaking the same language, one language. Glossaries are super key and important at any size organization. You'd be surprised if you ask a CEO or a VP of sales how they would define ABM, you're going to get wildly different answers at some of the most mature looking brands that you see online today. So just make sure that you establish a single source of truth for what you're hoping to do, and then always speaking in the language of business objectives, because that's going to unify everybody a lot more.
And then with alignment too, there's a laundry list of hundreds of possible signals that people could be going after. How are you choosing which ones to go after? How are you aligning the rest of the team on which ones you're going after? And what are those first couple signals people should be looking for possibly?
I have many thoughts. There are like four core places where you could always look to get started that everybody has. It's like first, Karina already alluded to it from a demand gen perspective of like website traffic. When we think about signals from a website traffic perspective, in an ABM program, some of the hardest things to overcome are like, do they know that we exist? And do they know that there's a problem to solve? God. MacBook Pros, thumbs up. Anyway, by looking at the website, it's not a guarantee. I want to be super clear. But if we're thinking about it from a perspective of, do they know that they have a problem? If they're on your website, there's likely some level of problem awareness. They are definitely brand aware in some capacity. And then likely, depending on the pages that they looked at, they could even be like product specific aware. So from a starting point as a great signal, website engagement's a great place. The other thing would just be as two other places to look. One would be closed lost. I love closed lost. Closed lost is my favorite place to start because one of the greatest challenges within any ABM program would be the data that you have. And when you look at non-customers, closed lost is the best data source that you have available because they've already walked through a sales cycle. They've already told you directly, these are the problems that we're experiencing. And often people are losing not to another competitor, but to no decision because it's hard to buy. So the pain at that time may not have been great enough to solve. So you can re-engage on that. And the other thing is, like, your company should change over time. Like, Scrappy ABM has had 17 iterations in the past year. My company has changed from when we had the first conversation with somebody. So things are changing, so we can re-engage in that way. Last two, and then I'll pass it over to Tyler because it's how I come up from you. Customer win-back programs, the exact same reason as closed lost. You have great data there. Nobody is loyal to that audience. And then if you really struggle, and we were talking about this in the Forge X Council for one of our friends that's building an ABM program, they're really struggling because on the demand gen side, they're like MQL addicts. And she's like, I can't build anything there. Whereas if you start on expansion as an opportunity, you can build out your ABM model using great data. But generally speaking, most organizations don't have great like measurement system for the expansion side of things from a lifecycle perspective. Like in HubSpot, their lifecycle stage will always be customer. So like you don't necessarily have to get as much into the measurement of are they an MQL or an SQL or an opportunity, like they're just a customer. So then you can actually build out more of the ABM specific measurement capabilities on these accounts. And again, you have the best data there. So those would be the four places to start from a signal perspective would be like, again, closed lost, customer win back programs. Are they showcasing intent and they were a former customer? And then the last, most certainly not least, would then be product utilization if you're in the SaaS space or just like any signals that you have within your products or your customer base that indicates that they would be potentially looking at upselling. And that could be all back to website re-engagement with just more specific filters.
Yeah, I would say I'm literally probably 110% aligned with everything Mason said, because that's really how I'm trying to run things now. So for those that don't know, I just started at Movable Ink. And so that's basically the type of strategy I'm running now or trying to build is based off of those exact signals. Because to his point, like that's where you're going to find the most accurate data to begin finding which signals to go after. One, the most important thing is it's like Mason said, it's not all website traffic or engagement. I think there's the ability for us to get a little bit more granular in what type of website traffic there is. Like there's top of funnel or maybe it's blogs and stuff like that. But then there's the product, the solution, the case study pages that we can pay more attention to as higher intent signals. But for example, close lost accounts, win back opportunities are things that we're focused on right now. Because that's, to me, one that's low hanging fruit and that's a better signal for potential early success. One of the first things that we're going to do is build a win back strategy right off the bat. Because we do have that internal data that we know why we lost them in the first place. We have that context. But then two, we have historical data that does tell us that if we do create a qualified opportunity from these same accounts, that win rate is 2x versus if it's just a net new account, right? So we have the data that backs that up and suggests that's a great signal for us to go after these type of accounts, in addition to eventually closed lost opportunities, and even to another extent, even certain partner opportunities where we have accounts that are partners with certain companies that we work very closely with. Just a couple of additional things that I would add on to what Mason had said.
I love that we're all focusing on first party intent data. So essentially, what is the data we already have as a business about how our customers, best fit customers, future customers are interacting with us. And I always say this is the best way you can get a seat at the table. The best account-based marketers, the best marketers really, are the ones that act as stewards of account data. So everything that they just said, again, highlight, underlined, you can be very predictive here with what programs to launch and when you're looking at your own data, like Tyler said, looking at specific pages that were really high intent pages, pricing, demo, et cetera. But also too, like looking more at the top of the funnel, what are they doing with your industry report as an example? That's a really good leading indicator to focus and narrow in on those types of campaigns for a particular sales stage in the cycle. So you can get to be very predictive just based on your own data that you have. You don't necessarily need a lot of these big, expensive enterprise level tools to get there. A lot of times you can do the data modeling with what you already have in your CRM and tell the story of these are the types of one to many or one to few or one to one campaigns that we should launch here because we saw at these 10 deals in this industry with these ICPs and these personas that they leveraged heavily in this type of content or this type of event. So I think that, yeah, be the steward of your account data early with the data you already have, your first party intent data.
I love it. Yeah. And so now we have, so people have gone through their laundry list of signals. They've worked out which signals might be best for them. They've looked at their account data. What does the MVP look like? So somebody, they've never built an MVP or they've never built an ABM program before. What does that look like to you? And I know I have a very different approach than Mason and Karina and everything. What does that look like for you? And what do you typically recommend?
We want to just keep going. Me, Tyler,
Karina, Robin. Do that.
Sure.
Yeah, again, I'm probably going to have a very different approach because I primarily work with organizations that like don't have a big tech stack. They're like just using their CRM and like a marketing automation platform and then like some fringe tools. So like the MVP, we use a 4D framework for all of our programming. So it's data, distribution, destination, and direction. So data would be everything we've talked about. What is the signal that we're going to use to go after this intended audience? And as you're building your first ABM program, don't build an ABM program. Build a signal-based repeatable playbook that's a process that you can work with sales on. And don't think like, how do we go get our Dream 50? Because every time I've done a Dream 50, I've gotten like the Fortune 50 companies. So I think more of what's the process? What do we need to have happen that we can then engage accounts, which is why I'm so focused on what's the right signal. So again, yes, there is a firmographic, there's an ICP component. Like you don't want to just send junk to the sales team that might be website traffic, but it's ICP fit website traffic that then creates a playbook for then your sales team to re-engage those accounts with highly personalized content. And I think of the distribution channel largely as like sales outreach, maybe with some ad overlay. And my primary goal is next step content. So if they were already looking at our product page and our pricing page and our schedule call page, what's the next step that they would need to understand? Probably use case content and case studies. So what's the next step that they need to understand based on what we already have data around? So that's destination. And then direction is how do we track it? Ideally, if you have website tracking already set up, you can track the engagement through, do they come back to the website and actually view the content that we send them? The reason this is so important as you go to build an ABM program is if you build this correctly using your existing data that flows through your systems, what will happen is sales will start to predictably get an additional meeting or two on the calendar. It's not gonna be revolutionary, but it's like maybe one or two meetings a week that then they're like, this was freaking sick. This was awesome. Like this helped us actually get right fit meetings on the calendar, which like for a lot of people, when they do outbound, they may not actually have that. And then the question becomes, how do we do more of this? And that's when you're like, awesome, I've got buy-in. Let me go build an ABM program on the front end that actually drives more accounts into our trigger point. And again, you've already built the process. So sales doesn't have to change the process. The goal is then how do we intentionally go after the right accounts at the beginning of our marketing programming? Now, this is where we may have differences of opinions, but this is how I have personally found is the best way to get buy-in early and actually build into a crawl stage ABM program.
Yeah, I would say in a similar vein to what Mason said, maybe a little bit differently, is I almost probably begin with just a pilot, which is maybe a step after what Mason has done. But I typically have to think about how can we just maybe select our best AE, best SDR or pairs, and really form a pilot program around that. Because that at the end of the day, that helps you work out a lot of those processes, those signals, really work out the kinks to ensure that it is a smoother process so that eventually when you do want to roll it out to the entire team or additional sales teams, those processes are already like fine-tuned. There's no issues because if what I've seen in the past happen is if you try to roll this out across the entire team right away, all it takes is maybe one poor experience or something maybe doesn't go right. And then you're struggling with buy-in and everybody's just done. So that's really goes back to that kind of crawl stage that Mason talks about, is really starting slow. And then everything as far as getting a program started that I at least try to focus on is how does this go back to a business objective, similar to what Karina said? Like, how do we support something that's bigger than just maybe a marketing KPI? How does it support? Are we accelerating pipeline within a certain product line? Are we growing a certain partnership? Whatever it is. But how does what we're doing, whether it's in this pilot or a greater ABM strategy, roll back up to a business objective? Because that's much easier to get buy-in, because then it rolls up to a number, it rolls up to an objective that everybody across go-to-market teams are working together to achieve. And so when you can tie everything back to that, it's much better to have conversations top-down and get alignment cross-functionally to continue to build this strategy and find success.
And then Karina, on your piece too, I would also love to hear, in addition to a little bit of that, also, how are you measuring success here?
Yeah, I'll touch on that for sure. So I think from the perspective of an enterprise level ABM program, one thing that I would definitely recommend is if you're in the position to really spearhead ABM as a program, as a function, get involved and before the fiscal year is over with the head of sales and your executive leadership team to determine what are the core industry and verticals that we're hoping to go after next year. How are we spreading out our mix of books of accounts for sales, and embed yourself into that process, because there is heavy amount of data enrichment and configuring that is going on to set the sales team up for the start of the year. And most of us, I think, on the call are in a sales-led, heavy sales-led organization. So embedding yourself into the process of organizing the books and then aligning ABM as part of that data strategy and in partnership with sales and executive leadership is going to be really beneficial and set the stage that ABM isn't just a tactic. It isn't just a program. This is something that we are doing to make sure that our go-to-market efforts really hit the nail on the head quarter over quarter for this fiscal year. And as part of that, you're actually able to build some sort of like service level agreement between these two departments to understand, hey, these group of accounts are going to get a special set of budget, a special set of individuals in the organization, a special set of treatment. So our expectation is going to be a little bit different than your normal service level agreements for how you approach an account that comes inbound, as an example. Isaac, what was I meant to hit on?
Yeah, I was just curious on like that, the attribution measurement side of things as well.
So I think too, when you're looking at attribution, I see many people miss this step, and I think it's super important. And I think marketers on this call can really relate to the idea of a control group. So in addition to building who your target focus is of accounts, who's going to get this flavor of ABM love and treatment and programs, you should have another group that is essentially a lookalike group of accounts. They look just like the group of accounts that you're going after, but they're not going to receive that budget, that program, that spend, that time, energy, and effort. And when you have that, you're actually able to build your own benchmarks of what success looks like from ABM specifically. And it's not going to be, you're not going to have any guesses. You're not going to have people say, hey, it's because I knew him from way long back that we signed that deal. You're going to very be able to clearly say, these are our benchmarks. This isn't something that Sixth Sense or Demand Base or any other vendor is telling us. These are our benchmarks. This is what success looks like for us. And that should tie into your own benchmarks too in marketing. So what does your traffic look like month over month? What does the deal size look like month over month? How are you accelerating deals through the pipe? So I think that being able to be data forward here and have that comparison with something like a control group for your programs is going to be really beneficial as well.
Mason, Tyler, what are your thoughts?
Fully agree on like alignment with the sales team, and admittedly the lookalike audience I think is a great place. I think from a data perspective, it's the right approach. The challenge I've always run into is just in the top five reasons, we didn't address it already, but it's typically reason number four or five why ABM fails, is keeping up with the demands of sales. So if you do get buy-in, sellers, generally speaking, don't want to have a holdout group because they're like, well, if this is going to work, let's make it work. So there's a buy-in part that's going to be hard there. But again, if you can get that just to prove out the model, like that's a great approach, because I think marketers should always be A-B testing. But then it's just, for me, I'm a big fan of like path of least resistance. If I've gotten buy-in, I don't want to die on the hill on that one. But that's generally where I've gotten a lot of pushback on the testing side of things. The other thing, sorry, I've been typing up a storm in the chat. Somebody did ask real quick if I could repeat the 4D framework. So just super quickly, the 4Ds are data. So data would be like, who are we going after? Why are we reaching out? And then how do we message those people appropriately? That's the most complex one. So like quick example, you can have an exact lookalike audience that's an ICP fit. But if you're reaching out because it's a missed meeting playbook versus a closed loss campaign, those people should obviously be messaged differently. But sometimes we just pull firmographic lists, not thinking about the reason to reach out. So that's data. Next would then be distribution. So somebody's talking about the differences between like marketing plays and sales plays. Controversial hot take, sales is just a distribution channel for marketing if you do an ABM program. So in that context, sales is distribution, marketing is distribution. Those are just tactics of how you get in front of people. Next is then destination. So what is the content we're sending to them that then drives them into the next stage of their account progression? And then lastly is direction. How are we tracking that they've actually done the intended action? So going back to then, how do we measure success for every playbook? There should be an intended direction of where we want somebody to land. If they hit that direction component, like did they hit the product page? Did they book a call? Did they hit our content asset? Did they attend our webinar? Whatever that is, I try to make it really easy of a yes or no. And if they did, awesome, we won. If they didn't, okay, how do we fix it? And then it's an iterative process for every playbook in the context of an account progression model. So that's the thought process on that front. And that's why we love the 4D framework, because it works at every stage of an account progression model, whether it's awareness or opportunity conversion. Because if you can't answer those 4Ds, you don't have a playbook and you don't have a program. So that's why I try to read everything that we do back in those 4Ds.
And I did want to answer more directly to Jane's question in here around the actual channels that are being used. She said, where do you each start once you identify first campaign? Email, ads, sales outreach, gifting. On our side, we like user gem side of things, we definitely default a little bit more towards a paid media plus BDR outbound combo. than Mason would. But I'm curious to hear, Karina, Tyler, where do you typically start?
Yeah, I think for us, it's the messaging, right? So I think what Mason alluded to, like, you have to have a reason behind why you're going after a set of accounts, right? Whether it's win back, whether it's close lost. And once you have that reason, it's developing that right narrative and the right story when you go to market against those. For me, it's okay, if we're focusing on a set of win back opportunities, great, but we need to make sure we're going after them with the right messaging to re-engage their interest and get them, you know, back interested in why Immovable Inc. And so for me, it's working with our product marketing teams, and then it's working with our content teams to say, okay, what can we come together on and agree that's a good theme for these accounts, and then create that messaging around it. Because then once we do that, then that's going to influence what we typically put together for our different channels. So outbound, that's going to influence what our outbound team then puts together with their specific flows and their outbound personalization. And then secondly, it'll feed back into our paid channel. So if we're putting together a LinkedIn static ad, or if we're going to be publishing a LinkedIn CTV video, like, we want to make sure all of that is weaved back together to that overarching theme of what we're trying to get across to these accounts and the purpose or the reason why we're going after them. So for me, it really starts at the messaging, and then it weaves into all those different channels that we're going to be using to target those accounts, which again could be outbound, LinkedIn, email, landing page, like all those different things that create that seamless experience for these accounts.
Yeah, I love that you said experiences. For me, I typically always lean towards doing things that are not, I like to do the unscalable before you can scale. So rather than jumping to the more traditional tactics, paid as an example, paid advertising, those are helpful, but I look at those really more as just always on air cover campaigns. I like to do things that are more really human centric, and that can be like oftentimes will be heavy in community. So I'll often look to do a lot of community programs that are involved around in-person or virtual events that bring people together to discuss bespoke concepts and ideas that are really unique to them. I've often found that's been the largest accelerator, especially in the enterprise environment, to not only open but accelerate deals. So I think that you're always going to need to have a mix of campaigns to show varying degrees of success, whether that's driving more traffic to your website or whether that's getting more people to be hand raisers. There's a mix of channels and tactics that you can do, but I think that starting with 2 to 3 that prove some initial success that are probably unique too. So anything that, like, for example, too, if you're looking to really get an executive level engagement and haven't had that historically, you're going to probably need to change the way you're going to market with them and the tactics you do. And so it's going to probably involve a little bit more energy, time, effort, and spend, something that wouldn't be so obvious and so traditional. So I would lean on doing something boldly different to break through the noise and prove some initial success.
I agree with all of those things. My most successful ABM program was a marketing careers podcast that I ran for 2 years. Had nothing to do with anything that we sold, but it was just a great way to build relationships. And it was not scalable. It was super scrappy, pun slightly intended. But all that to say, as far as starting channels, I really do love to start with a sales program, primarily because I always come back to points of failure. And if ABM is going to fail, I'd rather it fail quicker than like us spend a lot of time and energy and effort, because there are certain environments that, even though the firmographics and like psychographically everything should marry up, like, there are some sales leaders that just will not work well with marketing. There are some marketing leaders that will not work well with sales. So if you start by having an outbound program that helps to get things running, you'll have a failure quicker. And then you can say, ABM is not going to work in our current environment. That's okay. We just need to do something else. The other side of it from a scrappy perspective is, if you lead with paid, you will go faster. And that may not be a good thing or a bad thing. It is just a thing to know. You have guaranteed delivery to your intended audience, but you've not necessarily validated your messaging. So I have great friends in paid. Isaac is one of them that use paid to validate messaging faster. I tend to not want to pay for unvalidated messaging, just a personal preference. So I like to use fixed cost channels to validate messaging and then scale through variable cost channels. So that's a thought process, not right or wrong, just different. And it depends on how loose your budget is on unvalidated messaging.
Yeah, I think one of the other kind of last points I'll make too is, and I know Karina had said it earlier, when you think about ABM is almost like just maybe a little bit more granular and targeted as part of your demand gen strategy. Like, if you have a really robust demand gen strategy, and as part of that, the channels that are the most successful as part of that could also be another way to think about which channels to use. You're almost doubling down if you know it's paid ads or if it's in-person or virtual events. If you know that's a great lever for demand, then you can basically scale that and then just make it more scale or personalized, more targeted, more granular towards whatever set of accounts you're going towards, because you already know you're going to get ROI from it at a larger scale. You're going to get probably even more now that you're at a more granular, more targeted effort. So that's also another way to think about it too.
I love it. And in terms of scales, as people are trying to scale their ABM program, different channels are more or less scalable than others without increasing headcount, especially on the outbound side of things. How do you all recommend within your specialty of SMB, mid-market, enterprise, how do you recommend people scale these programs once they have the signal, they have some base structure figured out? What do they do?
I'll just jump in. I can say that anytime something is proving enough success warranted to be, hey, this campaign is ending up driving the most net new meetings or what have you, as an example, that then becomes almost an evergreen campaign. And it's a really great opportunity for you to use that as a show and tell with even the broader organization. So maybe mid-market, SMB, et cetera. I know we're on a User Gems webinar, but one of the evergreen campaigns in enterprise at a company, Gong, was actually using the signal of job changing. And the way we got to that, to even test in enterprise, was we saw that so many of our SMB customers were rapidly changing jobs. So they were going from director of sales to VP or CRO of sales, but at an enterprise organization. And so when we were doing the account matching to build that list, we saw that there was just this massive signal notification that we need to pay attention to in a potential new way to break in the door. We built that program. It was super, super nimble to begin with. A lot of just manual chasing people down, making sure they looked at the email, making sure they knew what the notification meant. But once you had enough volume to prove that this was a substantial differentiator for a quarter or a month, if we didn't have this in place, we wouldn't have done it. Then you can really get the buy-in to scale this from really more of an operations perspective. So I think that anytime you notice a significant uptick in something that you're doing, a campaign or a tactic, seek to make that something that's evergreen and always on and put a little bit more rigor and operation around it.
Yeah, I guess for my part, it's a little tricky because one, I'm one ABMer in the US and then we have one practicing in EMEA, right? So we're both trying to build this up and it's also across two different product lines and then four regions in the US. So as you can imagine, that's a lot. So for me, at least for now, until we get maybe more headcount, it's what is a scalable effort that we can, you know, implement across regions and maybe to an extent within product lines so that it's more predictable quarter over quarter to know what we're going to do within each region, then across the pond into EMEA. Depending on what your bandwidth is and what your team structure looks like, you can also think about what is a framework that I can put in place that is more repeatable quarter over quarter, and you're just like changing out maybe the business objective we're focused on and maybe changing out maybe one or two channels, but at the end of the day, it's still the same people focused on the same thing together. It's still the same like process and framework. So that way you're not maybe introducing any new surprises or trying to get people to change anything. Like they know what to expect every single quarter in terms of the strategy that you guys are trying to implement.
Mine is pretty similar to Tyler, but the core of why we use frameworks is for repeatability. So ideally you're focusing on this program will be specific to a vertical or a use case or something to that extent. And then going back to our 4D framework, the ways that you scale this are, from my perspective, pretty simple. Like, do we have a larger pool of right fit accounts that have right signals that we can then trigger for a program? If yes, awesome. What are the channels that we're going to use to get in front of those people? If we have validated channels that are already delivering, now do we start to experiment with new channels that can scale us further? Again, that would be where you would start to incorporate maybe paid advertising as a scalable mechanism. Your content, if you have good content assets, you may scale the content production to get more specific to a variety of personas. And then lastly, the direction component, that's just like really good foundational ops, which ideally, if you've built your ops foundation correctly, that shouldn't break with scale. So the core is just going back to our 4Ds. Do we have a large enough data pool to scale a program? If no, okay, there's the problem. Great, we have the data pool. Do we have enough channels that engage these accounts with the right individuals involved? If yes, great. If no, okay, that's the problem. Do we have content that speaks to this audience? If yes, great. If no, that's the problem. So it's a diagnostic framework as well of like, where's the breakdown? Figure that out, fix that problem. Then you can move to the next scalable level. And it helps you to identify your constraints. You just figure out the constraint and you fix it. So sorry to make it really that simple in its thought process. Super hard to do. I want to be super clear. It's simple, not easy, but simple. because I just said, oh, you don't have the content, make more content, or oh, you don't have the channels, figure, like, but that's how you identify your constraints, and then you can figure out also, is it worth scaling? We never really asked that question. Is it worth scaling? But that's something that I like to think about a lot. Who says we should scale? Maybe this is good right now. And if we continue to scale it, we would actually lose the personalization. We have lower conversion rates and we have less engaged accounts because our content then sucks. So sorry, that's just another soapbox for me. Not everything has to scale, and that's okay.
Awesome. And we're coming up on, we're getting closer to time. So I wanted to open it up for questions and answers. Some of y'all have been asking questions in the chat, been fantastic. But I want to see if there's any other questions that are on your mind that this team could answer. I think right now, as we wait for some of those to come in, I do like the conversation that's going on in the chat right now around sales versus marketing and who looks good when it's done correctly. So I'm curious, so vocalize some of what's going on in the chat as well.
Yeah, Matt, you had a really good point. And your question was, how do you make sure that it's acknowledged that marketing or ABM was involved in an effort? I think it's great to show up, if you're welcome, to their weekly meetings. And I always show up with one slide. And basically the slide is, it just gives them an overview of, hey, here's what's working really well. Here's what's upcoming, what's new. And here's what you can expect to see down the line. And then I'll always try to come with a data point that's interesting about the account and a recommendation for the rep about how they could approach building deeper relationship and how I can basically partner with them. That down the line can lead to doing some success stories with them. So if you can go to an offsite or an all hands online and do just a one slide again, just a win story of an account. So put the logo on because they're going to pay attention when they see a logo, and then give them the timeline of the first engagement, the first known engagement you ever had with the account all the way through the end. And you'll see sometimes 15,000 touch points, right? Like they get to really understand the breadth of everything that marketing is doing as a whole. You can be super specific too about EDM. You can include some gong snippets too from them actually doing a win-loss survey where they give feedback about what really struck a chord with them. So just embedding yourself into their regularly scheduled meetings and showing up with just like a tiny data or data point or insight is going to instantly bridge you much closer to them, and they're going to be willing to collaborate with you down the line. So it's a little bit tactical, but helpful.
I would double down on what Karina said. That's been like the biggest part of what's helped me throughout my journey is really just being nosy and one, finding ways to jump into their team meetings. But one of the first things I do is I always call like an operational cadence, really where I plan out, okay, which teams am I meeting with? At what cadence, and then what is the purpose of those meetings all around our account-based strategies over the course of a quarter. So like weekly could be with our outbound leaders, bi-weekly it's with the outbound teams, monthly it's with the sales leaders. And really the purpose of each of those is to ensure that we're tracking towards success with these programs and that we're staying top of mind of what we're trying to do. And then with each of those, you know, we're expressing the success we're having. Are we staying track to goal? Are we not? What's happening? But each of those has a very specific purpose to ensure that everybody knows, like, this is not just a sales thing. It's marketing and sales working together to hit these goals. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure you know that through these meetings. And then part of that, too, is almost managing up. So we talked about how do you get buy-in. If you're working closely with your boss or your boss's boss, then they should be working with you to communicate up. So if they're going into e-staff meetings or board meetings, you need to be working with them to be able to express the success that you're having with these programs. Because then that goes up and then to the right. Are spread across horizontally, and it gets throughout the entire organization to the board. So it is very tactical and it's very time consuming to do it. But if you want to make sure that your success is getting known across teams, up, down, side to side, like it is a little bit of work to do that. And it takes a lot of effort, but it is worth it at the end of the day. So just wanted to double down on what Karina had said.
And Mindy has a question here as well. So when it comes to proving out your ABM efforts versus demand gen efforts in your CRM, what are the crucial things to track for a company that is new to ABM? I'm going to have one person take this one for the sake of time. All right. Thumbs are up.
I'll take it super quick. That's why we go back to, I keep referencing this 4D framework, but I actually mean we root everything that we do. So like the direction piece, like what is the win in the program that you've identified? Because in a demand gen strategy, that's going to be different than an account progression model for ABM. Because in an ABM program, we are specifically going after named accounts where the goal is to get the account to go like an account progression model. They're aware, they're showing initial engagement, they're showing meaningful engagement. They're now showing that they're a marketing qualified account because they've done clear product research. Now we're re-engaging. So like the wins all along the way are what you measure in an ABM program. And then I measure that internally for the, like the ABM team. And then what you report out would be like meetings booked, influence pipeline, that's in source pipeline, and then revenue. And the other component would just be target account engagement. Like your CEO does not care. Like they hit our product page, but like they care that the accounts are engaged. God, I'm also excluded such a dad because I keep doing this. I don't know. Anyway, all that to say, that's the core difference. And in a demand gen strategy, from my perspective and my understanding, demand gen is generally, there's actually like 1,000 different things that people measure in demand gen. And there's a whole other conversation that I'm going to open up. So at me on LinkedIn, ABM is potentially just like a subset of demand gen. That's a whole thing that we could open up. But long story short, those would be the core things that I would measure differently is like demand gen. And my perspective is ICP general, ABM is named accounts. So it's the measurement of those accounts moving forward.
Yeah. And then Karina, if you could, Amanda asked a question very similar and Mason, you touched on it a little bit, but she said, I struggle with the balance between overall demand gen and ABM. Sounds like from this group, they're happening in tandem. The concept of signal-based ABM sounds very, very program-focused. Is it a fair description to say ABM can simply mean a program for a specific segment of your audience? Karina or Tyler, if you want to expand on that answer.
Yeah, Amanda, I think that's a great way to look at it. I think that's going to really help simplify a lot of things. The best programs out there are the ones that combine demand gen and ABM together. So that's why too, with the control group that we talked about earlier, it doesn't mean you're not serving that control group. You may just not be giving them a subset of programs and tactics to go against. So it's a great way to look at it, Amanda. And I think it would probably help simplify things quite a bit. Probably could help from a budget perspective to look at it that way too. Yeah. So just, I would echo that as what Mason said too. That's a really fantastic way to look at it is the targeted named account approach and the programs that you're running against those versus the general universe of attracting everybody in your core ICP.
Yeah. And I would just add on like demand gen is definitely, it can be targeted, but it's definitely still broad in a sense where you might just have one overall theme that you're focused on for an entire set of accounts. Whereas I would think of ABM as you're taking a like a chunk of that audience out and then you're drilling down maybe two or three steps further to create more specific theme, sub themes and sub messaging and providing more allocation in terms of budgets and outbound efforts to those accounts out of that larger group. That might be another way to think about it too.
I love it. Any other questions that are top of mind, Matt? I didn't hear any media channels like YouTube, Bright Talk, content syndication vendors in any of the mix for ABM. Are you all using any of those? On the user gem side of things, YouTube pops up occasionally, but it's pretty light. In terms of low-hanging fruit, it's usually not the low-hanging fruit, at least in our bubble. Content syndication is definitely something we shy away from completely. Maybe I don't know how to use it well, but it's not something that we ever go after. I'm curious to hear everybody else's thoughts around those.
Yeah, I've never been bullish on content syndication because of the price and it's lead based. And it just, I think it enforces maybe the wrong practices from sales too, where it's like, hey, here's an ebook download, go follow up right away, which those hardly ever convert, I think, as we all know. I don't know. I just don't think that's very much aligned with ABM, at least from my POV. And I could be wrong, but one of the new things, I'll just end with this, let the other guy or let the other two speak, but I've been on the soapbox too lately around CTV ads. So LinkedIn has just released their new streaming ads feature. And so my last gig, I launched a few that were very vertical specific and I'm working on that again for our win back opportunity campaign. And similarly, if you wanted to try like YouTube, like this is very much in the same vein, but you're able to get more targeted using the same LinkedIn features, but you're targeting with video at home through their streaming platforms. So I think it's still early on, but I think that has the potential to be another really cool lever eventually for everybody to use.
Yeah, I would be bullish on those new channels, especially if you're one of the first in your vertical or your sphere to try it. I think I echo what everybody's been saying about content syndication too. I think sometimes those third-party publications, especially if you're selling to a hyper-niche audience, can be helpful at the start. So maybe think about it instead from a brand awareness perspective, partnering with them on a webinar or an in-person dinner cocktail. So there's different ways you could think about leveraging it. But yeah, I would still echo what Tyler said too and be bullish on those new channels to try.
I love it. Yeah, and I put this in the chat too, but ABM is really built around that relationship with sales and marketing, and content syndication doesn't build that. On our side, our ABM program is built around signals that are actionable for the reps. So for us, we select accounts that have the most champions at the accounts or previous champions, so that when the BDRs go to reach out, they have somebody to reach out to and a reason to reach out. Hey, congrats on that job. Hey, you used us in the past, things like that. So if there isn't that reason, it's actually not a signal that we'll ever see.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.